Eric Metaxas here. Please join me in a life-saving mission to set Sudanese slaves free through Christian Solidarity International. Since 1995, CSI has freed more than 100,000 women and children from years of bondage and abuse. Your $250 gift frees, feeds, and heals these captives and sets them on a path to a new life in freedom. Please help us free another slave now. Call 888-253-3522, 888-253-3522, or click the CSI banner at MetaxasTalk.com, MetaxasTalk.com.
Okay, welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. Eric is indisposed at the moment.
I'm afraid he's been having GI problems and uncomfortable bloating.
But I'm sure he'll be out in a jiff.
Oh, here he is now.
Looking pale and shaken. Oh, you okay, little buddy?
The Eric Metaxas Show.
Hey there, folks. Final segment with Charlie Kirk. Charlie, you've said so much of value today. I just got to ask you, though, I still have so many questions. It's such a mystifying situation. You have people like three-star General Tom McInerney in a conversation with General Flynn the other day, talking about stuff that is, you know, way beyond Zuckerberg giving money to do what you described earlier, because that's almost legitimate in an ugly way. You can see that wasn't a conspiracy by the Democratic Party or by the deep state that we know of. It was just somebody Zuckerberg trying to, you know, in a sense, take care of himself by doing this, right? And we know it's evil, but at the same time, it makes some kind of sense. But when you have General Flynn and General McInerney talking about the CIA and the FBI and the deep state trying to do a coup, where do you go with that?
I don't dismiss it. And I mean, I think after what we've learned of what our intelligence agencies are capable of and what they've done, I think it would be wrong to kind of throw that out. I will say this, that if you look at the characteristics of how the Central Intelligence Agency used to overthrow governments, one of the things that is in the playbook of the CIA is to publish polls that show that the incumbent you're trying to overthrow is very unpopular, so that when the final result comes that you want, no one is surprised by it. That is the Soviets used to do this all the time when they used to overthrow governments back in the 70s and 80s. This was part of their playbook too. And so, and here's one thing though, as we start to talk about this, I think we just need to ask questions and ask for verification. For example, what would compel McInerney to say what he is saying at this phase in his life, one of the most reputable generals? And he starts talking about hammer and scorecard and the manipulation of votes and all this stuff. It's pretty chilling. It really is. And by the way, this rabbit hole can be endless that we can go down, but I don't dismiss it. And I don't think anyone should. And what's so, let me just make a really interesting point here, which is that I grew up in an America, Eric. I grew up in an America post 9/11, where all of my liberal friends and all of the Democrats and all the documentaries that I was forced to watch told me the CIA was the worst thing ever. And they used to overthrow governments and they were being used by George W. Bush. I say, is now the Democrat Party the pro CIA party? Because that's really fascinating to me. I thought they were the ones that were always trying to tell us that they're the ones that are trying to usurp the will of the American people.
Well, but when you say you wouldn't dismiss it, you're not sounding clearly. This is not something that you're taking all that seriously. In other words,
no, I am. I just think that it's. I don't think we as civilians are ever going to be able to uncover that. I just don't. I think that finding whether or not Gina Haspel and Brennan and all them were using the Central Intelligence Agency domestically to overthrow a coup, that's something that is very compelling. It might be true. I think that there's other pieces of this puzzle that are much better, are much easier to be proven than that. And that's something for Michael Flynn and McInerney to focus on. And again, I don't dismiss it. I'm not saying it's wacko.
But it sounds to me like Sidney Powell is also focused on this.
Yeah, and I would love to see exactly what her, you know, what some of that evidence is. I read her 104-page lawsuit. It's very compelling, but I think they're all going to hit walls here, because if we think that the agency is all of a sudden going to have a smoking gun around that we can prove what they did, I think we're fooling ourselves. I mean, we're dealing with the most sophisticated spy operation in the history of the planet.
Okay. And so, well, that's that's the CIA. Let's talk for a second then about the FBI and the DOJ. What do you think is happening, for example, with the relative silence of Barr? In other words, do you have any theories there? Are he and the president working on something behind the scenes and they're just not talking about it?
It could be, probably not. I think that there is a concerted effort, especially in the top brass of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, to go back to business as usual, to kind of have a changing of the guard. And why there was no massive voter, I mean, maybe there was going to be a huge massive voter fraud revelation or investigation that comes out at some point. Maybe that's going to happen. I'm not necessarily optimistic about that. I'm not. And here's why. I said that if John Durham does not come out with his report by August, then nothing will stop these people from stealing, lying, and doing it again. Why have we not seen the Durham report? We are now in December, Eric. I have lost complete and total faith in the Department of Justice. I view it nothing more than a political enforcement tool of the Democrat Party, and I can prove it.
But Attorney General Barr is the head of it. What do you mean you don't know? What don't you know?
I can't explain Barr's action or inaction. I cannot tell you why his Department of Justice authorized investigations and authorized, for example, why go out of your way? And I know it's the Southern District and all that, but it's still under the DOJ purview to go after Steve Bannon, while you won't go after Peter Strzok and Lisa Page. That I just cannot comprehend. And so that stuff's happening under his Department of Justice.
Okay, let's go to something that's a little bit clearer. Georgia, the governor of Georgia, the secretary of state in Georgia seem potentially to have made a deal with, whether it's Smartmatic or Dominion, they seem to have somehow been in on this. Is that resonating with you? What do you think of that?
Potentially. I mean, there's evidence to show that lobbyists around Brian Kemp have also been very much influenced by Smartmatic and Dominion voting systems. I have a couple questions for Raffensperger and for Brian Kemp. Why did you use Dominion? Why did you award them a 9-figure contract? I would love to know the explanation for that.
That smells. That really stinks. It's $150 million of taxpayer money. I don't know the answer, but it's kind of interesting to me that Sidney Powell is and Lynn Wood are going after Kemp. I mean, that, you know, they're not dumb people. Why would they be going after Kemp? Why would they be using this kind of language and talking about what happened in Georgia?
Well, because there's probably something to it. And Brian Kemp and Raffensperger, they have basically surrendered to the Stacey Abrams lobby in Georgia. And Raffensperger was afraid of being called a racist by Stacey Abrams again and relaxed signature requirements, relaxed absentee ballot standards, changed the way that we count votes. For example, we have on this board here, Floyd County, they just found 2,600 votes, 800 plus benefit for Trump. This was a couple weeks ago. You might remember this. Fayette County, 450 plus for Trump. Walton County, 176 for Trump. So the point is that the Georgia election was an absolute mess. I would love to have an answer to this question from Raffensperger or Kemp. Why did they stop counting votes? Because they said there was a pipe burst when in reality it was a urinal that overflowed? Well, I would love to know the answer to that question.
But again, this is one of these things that's all you need to know. Something wicked is happening when somebody lies brazenly. It's very brazen lie. There's a reason they did it, and you know it's not a good reason. You know that. just a minute left, Charlie. What do you think is going to happen? Do you think that that this president will be inaugurated?
Impossible to know. I think that the probability is not why I fight. I fight because we're fighting for truth. And I don't want to weigh the odds like we're, you know, a Vegas betting table.
Right.
What I will say is this, and I was reading Proverbs last night, this deceit that they have planned, it will not be honored by God. It will fall. It will collapse, whether now or in the future. We can rest assured that what they pulled off here will be one of the most egregious, things in the history of our country to try and thwart the will of the American people.
And you have no doubt that is what happened.
I have no doubt this was stolen. None. Well, that's I've said it publicly.
When people like you say that, there are enough people like you that I respect tremendously are all saying that. And so my attitude is similar to yours, is that it doesn't matter what the odds of victory are. If we don't fight to the death for something like this, we have no soul. I'll end on that happy note. Charlie Kirk, great to be with you.
Thank you, Eric. God bless you.
They're gonna put me in the movies. They're gonna make the big
Hey there, folks, from the frying pan that is Charlie Kirk into the fire that is John Zmirak. John, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Eric.
And there's flaming sulfur behind you on the picture behind you. Is that Sodom being destroyed? What is that?
Yeah, that or a snapshot of next week's news. I can't tell.
Yeah, I don't know. And actually, who is that artist? You know, there's now people who are listening on the radio don't know. There's a mural behind you. But what is that?
It's the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, but I can't find the artist.
it looks like 15th century. I'm just guessing. But anyway, did you know that there's a man named Steve Collins, an archaeologist in Albuquerque, whom I've gotten to know? He's written a book on the discovery of biblical Sodom. It is so compelling and so amazing. I'm putting a chapter about that in my book, Is Atheism Dead, which will come out a year from now. But it is so amazing. So to see that, we'll talk about that another time. John, I want to talk to you, first of all, about what I was talking to Charlie Kirk about. I am stunned that everyone is not standing on their rooftops screaming that people have tried to murder American liberty. We're talking about COVID. We're talking about Biden's cabinet. There will be no Biden's cabinet by the grace of God, because he will have stolen the election. That will not be a legitimate president. I cannot see it any other way. What am I missing?
You're missing the massive servility of so many Americans, including so many American Christians. Servility, it's a word you don't hear much because people don't want to express it because it's what they live by.
Thatcher, I'm sorry, but we've been watching the Crown lately, which is so magnificent. And in the new season, Thatcher, played brilliantly by Gillian Anderson. Amazing, absolutely amazing. But she has twice now talked heroically, and she didn't use the term servility, but she said faint-hearted. But she said it in such a way that it was as damning as to be servile, to be faint-hearted when the heart of a lion is required. Is horrific. I know you write about this in an article at The Stream, but so is this your explanation for why people, even like Tucker Carlson, whom I love, he's not screaming about this from the rooftops? It's just bizarre to me. What am I missing?
Well, servility is the love of servitude, okay? If you look at the seven deadly sins, wrath, unjustified or excessive anger is a deadly sin. And the virtue that you practice instead is patience. But remember, all the virtues are on a spectrum. The virtue is in the middle. It's the golden mean, as Aristotle and Aquinas and Dante would say. The golden mean is the virtue. On the one side, you have the deadly sin of anger, or wrath. On the other side, you have the equally deadly sin of servility, where you just suck it up and you take abuse and you feel morally superior and you get the deep-seated resentment or a deep-seated sense of your own righteousness.
Okay, so this is what Nietzsche talked about.
What Nietzsche meant by the slave morality was a caricature of Christianity.
Okay, now you're very right, and you write about this brilliantly at The Stream. We've already put it up on my Twitter. I mean, I've retweeted it on Twitter, and we'll put it, I think it's already on Facebook, but it's a brilliant article, and you talk about this.
People are already getting ready. People are already getting ready for, oh, well, the churches are going to be closed. We're going to have our kids forcibly vaccinated. The government's going to be closing down the Little Sisters of the Poor. There'll be even more abortion and infanticide. Oh, well, we lost. We lost fair and square. I guess we'll just have to endure and suffer, and we'll be so virtuous and noble for suffering.
It's a posture. It's kind of like assume the position, except not exactly. It's basically a posture that says we don't want to win. We want to be crucified. We want to be martyrs. It's kind of a martyr complex.
Yeah.
Victory is a dirty word to these people. Right. They don't understand that God's kind of defeat ends in victory. Defeat is not the goal. You're talking about people who have fetishized, made an idol of defeat, compliance.
Right.
They long for it's like they long to be persecuted so that they can say, see, I was right.
Furthermore, it's a pretext for sloth. If the Democrats steal the White House and steal the Senate, which it looks like they might because they're using the same corrupt technology for the Senate races in Georgia that they use for the presidential races. So why do we expect anything different to come out of it? If they get a full Senate and pack the Supreme Court with 14 more Democrats on there, Michael Avenatti, Jesse Smollett, Tawana Brawley, I don't know what they'll throw up there. If they get away with that, then it won't. They'll be closing the churches, but they'll be taking away our kids. We will be helpless. And you know what? A lot of Christians out there want to be helpless because then they don't have to do anything. They won't feel that it's on their conscience to stop the murder of babies through abortion. Oh, come on. We can barely have legal religious services. How can you expect that of us? It takes a huge burden off your shoulders of responsibility to do something if you're utterly helpless. You get to just say, I'm just a victim. I'm a pinata. I'm a whipping boy. I'm just like Jesus.
Right. That is exactly right. Now that accounts for certain Christians that we know, that they somehow think that there's something noble in this kind of defeat, even though you and I would argue, no, you are being called right now to fight. What would be noble is for you to die fighting this battle that you don't know whether you can win or lose, but it's the right battle to fight. That would be noble, but they're already saying, no, I'm past that. We've already lost. There's no use in fighting.
Right.
I just want to shift over, though. I mean, National Review, I'm not shocked that they have taken that posture. I'm disgusted, but I'm not shocked. But I am shocked that I mentioned Tucker Carlson, whom I love, but he's not hitting this. There are a lot of people you would expect to be hitting this with everything because everything is at stake. And they act like it's just another one of the problems that we're having right now.
Here's what I think is going on. I think, Eric, in the back of a lot of people's minds, they're thinking, what if the crazy right-wingers are right? What if really we are having an intolerant leftist tyranny will in fact be imposed here, as it's happened in other countries? It's happened in other Western countries. It happened to the Czechs, happened to the Germans, it happened to the French during World War II. What if? Do I really want to be one of the first people on the list that they make it impossible for him to work, that they trump up some charge and arrest him? They kick his kids out of school. No, let me put my head down and maybe they'll pick on somebody else and I'll be able to get by and then something will happen. You know, something always happens and we'll get freedom back. You know, hey, you know, some other country will do a Normandy invasion and save us. But then you got to step back and think there is no other country. There is no fallback. America is the last reservoir of freedom in the world at the moment. Maybe in 50 years it'll be Brazil, but for now, this is the place that the Chinese Christians look to, that the Uyghurs look to, that the Middle Eastern Christians look to. And if we fall, the rest of the world suffers. I'm less worried about what's going to happen to me, Eric, if the Democrats take over everything, including the Supreme Court. I'm thinking what's going to happen to the Christians in Syria. Because Joe Biden's administration has already made it clear they're going to support al-Qaeda taking over the whole country of Syria. I'm not sure why, but I know what will happen. A million Christians will be driven out of there the way they were driven out of Iraq, and there'll be no America for them to go to.
Look, I've been saying exactly this, that anybody who thinks that this is about America, this is much bigger than America. It's kind of like, you know, if you can kill the father, the wife and the kids are easy pickings. So you go after the one who's going to protect them. This nation, the whole world, the people in Hong Kong are looking to this nation right now. The people suffering the tortures of the damned in North Korea, Christians in North Korea are looking to America. They're praying right now. And I think that this is a battle for them. This is a battle for them. America has always been, to my mind, you know, it's not just about us kicking butt and winning. It's about us doing that for those around the world who can't do that for themselves, to be a beacon of freedom, to give them hope. Reagan, of course, was that. That's our job.
Right. And if we let a few backroom officials with voting machines steal what our ancestors fought and died to create and preserve, shame on us. History will not look back on us kindly.
We're going to be back with John Zmirak. Folks, please don't forget to go to mypillow.com or mystore.com and use the code Eric. We appreciate it.
I'd rather have Jesus than silver or gold. I'd rather be his than have riches untold.
Investors seeking steady cash flow, ready to diversify? NRIA has grown to be one of the nation's leading specialists and offers 10% annualized monthly payouts with bonuses targeted at 18 to 21%. That's right. You could receive steady 10% return monthly payments with bonuses. As their slogan says, they specialize in realty investing done right. You can even use your 401k or IRA to invest. NRIA's 15-year track record and $1.2 billion in new construction development backs you. Learn how you can invest in this hard asset real estate cash flow fund today and receive 10% annualized monthly payouts with bonuses. This is something savvy investors should research and consider. Call now 800-700-5483. That's 800-700-5483 or visit NRIA.net.
Folks, I got some embarrassing news to share with you, but you know what? This is just the kind of a show where I don't care. I'm willing to lay my heart, you know, on the line. Here's the issue. Mike Lindell with MyPillow, you may notice that I have a bobblehead of him near me. He's here to remind all of us that when you go to MyPillow.com, you get whopping discounts if you use the code Eric, okay? Now, there are a lot of people who haven't done that, and we have your names here. And Chris Himes and Albin pointed out to me that there's like three pages of you whose first name is Eric. You yourself, I mean, that's humiliating for me that even though your name is Eric, you're still not willing to use the code Eric. I mean, if you don't want to use it because it's my name, use it because it's your name. But the point is that I see who you are. And I just feel humiliated by this. Please go to mypillow.com. It's okay, Mike. It's going to be okay. Go to mypillow.com. Use the code Eric. You're going to get whopping savings and really high quality products. Did I mention that? Thank you. Folks, I'm talking to John, the Situation's Mirak. John, what is the title of your piece at The Stream about which we are talking?
It's called We Refuse to Fight, and it has a picture of Hitler in front of the Eiffel Tower in Paris in 1940.
Okay, that makes the point. We refuse to fight with a picture of Hitler in front of the Eiffel Tower. It kind of makes your point very clearly. You don't even need a title. Well, John, I still, what you're saying about people who are kind of accepting defeat already. They're worried and they're saying the odds of victory are so slim that, you know, I'm going to sit this one out
right, and
I'm going to deal with the Biden presidency and I'll have a good job because I'll be able to beat Biden over the head for four
years. That's right.
Something like that. That doesn't sound right to me. That doesn't sound like where we should be right now.
If we let them steal this election, why would they ever hold another one? or another honest one. If they get away with this, why would they stop? I mean, seriously, would you, if you were ruthless enough to steal a presidential election and you got away with it, why would you ever stop? We saw how abusive the deep state was while Trump was president. They tried to put Kyle Rittenhouse in prison for life for murder for defending himself. They tried to put the McCluskeys in prison for defending their homes. They've closed your churches. They've closed your schools. They want to forcibly vaccinate your children. The World Economic Forum is talking about an end to private property, an end to cash, everything being in the control of the not just the government, but the United Nations and global agencies. These people. Justin Trudeau, Prime Minister of Canada, admitted that the COVID virus was a pretext. It was an excuse to do all sorts of left-wing progressive things he'd already had in mind. That it, they are being, the left could not be showing their hand more openly. They have laid their cards on the table. If we don't fight them now, when we still have the means, we won't have anything to fight them with in the future. We'll be begging for scraps. Can we have a little more fish head soup in cell block C over here? We promise to cut more firewood, commissar.
Okay. Sidney Powell, you know Sidney Powell. She is so heroic, so extraordinary. She just got the quote-unquote smartest man in the room on her team. Do you know anything about that?
No, sorry. Who's this?
The smartest man in the room. I was talking to Kevin McCullough about this yesterday. It's some cybersecurity super genius.
Oh, that fellow with the very difficult to pronounce name. Do you have
that's why everybody says he's the smartest man in the room, because I can't pronounce his name.
I read that affidavit. The evidence just keeps coming and coming and coming, and the media just keeps dodging it like this is a game of paintball. Every time there's a piece of evidence, they censor it, they refuse to report it, and then they say, you don't have any evidence. Well, you are not letting us post the evidence. Eric, I wrote a column about a week and a half ago vouching for Sidney Powell personally, saying, I know her, she's a woman of great integrity, she's an honest woman, she would not be purposely lying about this election stuff. Facebook has banned that article. You cannot share that article. Twitter has labeled it false. Is it false that I know her? Is it false that I think she's an honest woman? That's what's happening.
You mean to tell me that the article that you wrote, I mean, I have to repeat everything because I cannot believe what you just said. You wrote an opinion piece about the relationship. You worked with Sidney Powell over the course of a year, got to know her as this woman of tremendous integrity. And you're saying that is banned from Facebook?
Right. Facebook has banned it and is like threatening to ban the stream from Facebook. We're getting kind of worried about that. They will not allow people to share this article. And Twitter is labeling it false. What part of it is false? I knew her. My opinion is that she's an honest woman. Nope, that is partly false, as the neutral platform of Twitter has determined.
Okay. But see, this is the thing. You helped me make my point. When people do things like this, doesn't it tell you what side we should be fighting on? In other words, even if it were true that Sidney Powell weren't a wonderful person, the idea that they would dare, to ban you from using this platform, which is used to spread endless garbage every day, but what you wrote, that has to be put to the side. Twitter banned, I shouldn't say banned me, but Facebook threatened me similarly the other day. But Twitter now routinely refuses to let you post things. They refuse to let you post. There is an article, I shouldn't say an article, it's a transcript of a conversation between General Flynn and General Tom McInerney. They were having a conversation about the deep state and the voter fraud and all this different stuff. You could not post it on Twitter. This is a conversation. This is not a bunch of lies. It was a conversation that it exists. You cannot read that conversation on Twitter. They won't let you access the article.
Shame on anyone who claims to be a Christian or a conservative who is helping these totalitarian thugs put the gags on our mouths, put the handcuffs around our wrists, put the padlocks on our doors. shame on you. And don't come to me expecting you to subscribe to your magazine or donate to your ministry or bail you out of jail or take a whiz on you if you're on fire. If you are going to help these people.
I didn't expect to go to the whizzing issue, but I got to tell you, John, what you're saying, you buck me up, because I think you look around and you say, where is everybody? This is the time to fight. Now is the time for all good men to come to the aid of their country.
That's right.
Now, not 4 years from now. Now. We're out of time, John. In the next segment, we're going to play an Ask Metaxas. We're going to talk to you on Thursday. My friend, thank you so much. Folks should go to thestream.org and check it out.
Thanks, John. New York City.
Hey there, folks. As you know, sometimes we do a little segment on this program. We like to call it Ask Metaxas or Ax Metaxas. And we get these wonderful emails. I just want to say, first of all, we get tons of encouraging emails. And to those of you who write to me through the MetaxasTalk.com website or my own personal website, I can never say what the emails mean to me. There are some just wonderfully encouraging emails. I read every single one. I certainly can't read them on the air or answer them, but I'll tell you, they mean a lot to me. And I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart. Seriously, thank you for those emails. Chris, we have a question, and we're going to use this in our Ask Metaxas. Why don't you, Chris, read the question, and I'll see what I can say.
Yeah, this is a email from a grandparent about their granddaughter. Hi, Eric. Our granddaughter is 19 and has always been a very strong Christian. This last year, she has decided she is attracted and in a relationship with the same sex. Our hearts are broken and we pray for her repentance every day. What can we say to her that would let her know we still love her, even though we don't agree with her lifestyle? Somehow, it seems when someone comes out with their homosexuality, they seem to feel as though if you don't agree with it and with their lifestyle, then it means you don't love them. Is there something we can say to her that she could understand that you can still love someone even when you don't agree with what they are doing? Do you have any advice you could share with me?
Yeah, that is a heartbreaker, but I think it's common for a lot of people, not just when somebody comes out as, you know, being a same-sex relationship. What the woman says is that her granddaughter's 19 and has always been a very strong Christian. And so that makes you feel the more confused, if you're in a situation like this, like, well, what is going on? I think you need to say a couple of things. First of all, there have been Christians who don't know how to deal with this in a Christian way, and they don't know how to love someone with whom they disagree. Now, let's be honest, there are levels of disagreement, okay? If you have a 19-year-old who's in college and you're paying her bills, or she's at home and you're paying her bills or whatever, you have a lot of say in that person's life. And I think you need to be clear that I just want to say that in a case like this, when the kid is 19, I think you need to make it outrageously clear to them that you love them and that you know, or you want them to know that even though you are unhappy with this choice, that you absolutely love them. But we're living in a time, of course, as this woman says, when people say, well, you need to love me for me, which is baloney, because it's a choice you have made. Even if you have a strong sexual attraction, there's no compulsion to act on it, right? So if somebody says, that's who I am and I have to behave this way, it might be how you feel, but it doesn't mean you have to behave that way. That'd be like the three of us who are married would say, but I have this attraction to this other woman and I have no choice. I have to act on that. It's like, clearly you don't. And clearly if either of you or another friend of mine said, I have to, I would say, no, you don't. And if you do, you'll have me to deal with. I'm going to be in your face because you don't need to do this. This is wrong. Now, if it's a 19-year-old granddaughter, you know, you can't talk to her that way. But the point is, just because somebody has an attraction, it does not mean they have to act on that attraction. Many of us have various attractions, which we would say
you know, are not going to be good for my family, for my life or whatever. And we say no to them every day. That's normal human life, folks. People do that. You know, I don't know anybody who's married for a long time that doesn't deal with this at some point or another. You don't just follow your attractions. The moment you do, you're in sin. And so we have to acknowledge that people can have feelings, emotional feelings, sexual feelings, but the idea that you are compelled to follow that is a cultural lie. And so I say that because it's as important for heterosexuals to know that as it is for people who are same-sex attracted. But we live in a culture that says, no, 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 you are your attraction. That's who you are. And I think that's nonsense. You know, that's like saying that any man or woman that has ever had a flicker of attraction for someone other than their spouse is an adulterer, created by God to be an adulterer, or created by God to be, you know, polygamous or something. Like, that's just silly. We're fallen human beings, and we all have different attractions. But I also would say, to encourage this grandmother, a lot of young women especially who say the same sex attracted at ages like this, years later, turns out that they change, they kind of drift away from that, and they get married. I can think of several. The most famous example, of course, is Anne Heche, who was, you know, Ellen DeGeneres's, you know, love interest on, you know, big deal news in the 90s, and Clinton had them at the White House and this and that. And then suddenly they break up. She gets married, has kids. Hey, wait a minute. I thought that was her identity. Well, it wasn't her identity. I think of a friend from college, his little sister, you know, around graduating from college in her 20s, she's in a gay relationship. And then lo and behold, a few years later, she marries a guy, has a family. I mean, I think we need to understand these things are complicated, but especially with a young woman like this, the most important thing is to let her know you love her. She probably already knows you're not thrilled with her lifestyle. Yeah. You say what you can, but I think just as it's possible to err on the side of never saying anything and letting people know how you feel, it's probably even more probable that you would say too much and drive people away. Those of us who have kids, Chris and I, we know that there are things you can say, and then there's a time not to say something because it will actually do more harm. And some people think, oh, I want to err on the side of speaking the truth. Well, can I tell you what? You could call it speaking the truth, but there are times when speaking the truth can hurt people and harm people, and it's better to say nothing. And so you have to have discernment on that. And also you have to trust God that if you really pray, and I don't pray in an anguished way, but pray with confidence that God loves this girl even more than you do, Grandma, and that he has a plan for her life. And you may or may not be part of that plan, but you take your shots when you can. You share that love when you can. Be kind to her girlfriend if you end up meeting her. Be kind and loving. And I think that says way more about your ultimate point of view than anything else. Holy cow, we're out of time. So much more to say. We'll leave it there. I feel a shiver run up my spine. I feel the warmth of my hand. Hey there, folks. We talk about a lot of tough stuff lately. We're going through some tough times. One of the things you can do, this is very important. If you're going through a tough time, do something for somebody who is going through a much tougher time. Help somebody who is suffering more than you are. That's an amazing thing to be able to do that. We have an opportunity. We are working again this month, as we have in the past, with CSI, that's Christian Solidarity International, to help free slaves in South Sudan. Now imagine, while we complain about the possibility of entering a dark time in this nation where we're no longer free, imagine while we're having that conversation that there are people today who are actual slaves, because the radical Muslims, whether it's Boko Haram, they have a belief
that slavery is okay, and that if you don't believe the way they do, if you're a Christian, for example, they can capture you and enslave you. Now, CSI is working on the ground in places like Southern Sudan, in fact, particularly with Southern Sudan, that's what we're doing, to free slaves. And they have told us that $250 given to CSI helps them to free a slave and to set up that person in a life of freedom. So what do they get? First of all, they have the ability, and I want you to understand how amazing this is, folks, that they have established relationships where they can do this. They can actually buy slaves out of slavery. It's an amazing, amazing thing. It's complicated. We'll talk about it another time. But they do that. Then they set them up with aid, with food, literally buy them a goat. They give them a whole fresh start in life. They get a novitium vaccine for cattle. That is what they do, okay, in order to buy a slave back. If you go to a slave owner in Southern Sudan and say, your cattle are dying, we have a vaccine. We'll give you the vaccine for your cattle if you give us this human being. This is what they have figured out, and it works, and that's what they're doing. That's why we need this money from you. So they do that. They buy the vaccine to get the person back. Then they set them up. They give them a goat, a she-goat, which gives milk. They set them up with a whole survival kit. It involves, you know, a blanket, cooking pots, all kinds of stuff, fishing hooks. They need all these things. Okay, now we need your help, folks. We're going to give you all kinds of stuff as we normally do, but I'm not going to talk about that right now. What I'm going to talk about now is the fact that we need everybody to help. So if you can't give $250, what can you give? There are some people who for Christmas, you say, you know what do I need for Christmas? I don't need anything for Christmas. I have everything. Why don't I do this? I will give grandpa in grandpa's name. He doesn't want anything. In his name, I'm going to free four slaves. For $1,000, I can literally free slaves. This is not theoretical. This is not a nice idea. This is not about giving you some big company that does something good. This is about $250 freeing a human being from slavery. Hard even to imagine, but it's true. We'll talk about it more this month. But we want you to help. I'm going to give you the phone number. You can go to our website, metaxastalk.com. It's just important for us to do a good thing when we're going through such a tough time in our country. Do something great for somebody who, without you folks, without you helping them, they are enslaved. We're going to be telling you about this month. But here's a phone number if you prefer a phone number. Go to metaxastalk.com. It's all there. But the phone number is 888-253-3522. I'll say it again. Imagine that you could do this today. Imagine that you have the ability to do this, something this good and this powerful today. 888-253-3522, 888-253-3522. There are people out there who can give $10,000. I say it again, that I'd be delighted to spend an evening with you as a way of thanking you. Anybody out there who can give $10,000, it's my joy. And down the line, folks, this is an amazing opportunity to do good. Please take this opportunity. God bless you.